Welcome to The Kitchen Table, a conversation about faith, music, and culture. Join Shine.fm's ministry director, Brian McIntyre Utter, and his 18-year-old son, Jake, around the table for this week's chat.
Welcome to The Kitchen Table. We are a father-son show talking about faith, music, and culture. My name is Brian.
I'm Jake.
And we're so happy that you're along this week. Every week we discuss a faith question here on The Kitchen Table. And the reason that we started this program was to really spark conversations, faith conversations between parents and their children, no matter their age, children, teenagers, young adults, it doesn't matter. We never stop discipling our children as parents. This is why we do The Kitchen Table, to spark those conversations. I'm Brian, that's Jake. I'm father, he is son. So this week we're discussing a new question. The question, are there ways to follow Christ on a smartphone? We're going to be looking at the pitfalls and also the benefits of technology, the good and the bad, because there is good and bad. We'll discuss some music a little bit later in our program. We have a couple segments, if you're just tuning into our show, a couple segments that we do later on. One, we have a segment called Music Matters, where we discuss new music. And then we also have a segment we call Culture Shock, where we're just looking at something happening in our country, in our state, wherever, in our culture this week, and just kind of hashing that out as well. So to dive into our faith question today.
Before we dive in,
sure.
This is also a special episode because one of my best friends is on the show with us.
We do have guests from time to time.
Introduce yourself.
Hi, I'm Josh.
Josh Chambers.
Yeah.
Is a student at Olivet Nazarene University. Josh, originally from?
Philadelphia.
From Philadelphia, PA, in the house today. And Josh is going to be giving his perspective as well. Again, we like to celebrate generations here. That's why we do that. So the faith question to kick us off here, are there ways to follow Christ on a smartphone? And I wanted to actually start off with a question to you guys, if I could. Finish this sentence. As I evaluate my life right now, my use of social media, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Snapchat, whatever, is these three different options here, guys. A, is it under control, limited, and healthy? B, not controlled or restricted, but also not having a negative influence on my life? Or C, it's uncontrolled and unhealthy. I can check my social networks compulsively throughout the day, and it's probably not good for me. So A, B, or C?
For me personally, I would say I'm a B. I'm not super controlled by social media, but it is kind of like a big factor.
In your life?
In my life, yeah.
I'm going to come back to your answer. Let's hear from Josh.
I actually think I'm an A because I just recently got rid of most of my social media.
Taking a fast, or is this a permanent thing?
Permanent.
Permanent thing. All right. Unplugging, disconnecting. Now, I want to go back to Jake's response, and the reason is Jake actually filmed a video just last night of him drumming. He's a drummer, and posted it to social media. Now, you've never done that before. You've never actually filmed yourself on the drums.
No.
Why not?
I always struggled with a sense of insecurity about my drumming, and so I never posted it because I was scared of judgment, but I wanted to see.
Okay, so now you did that video last night, and you posted on Facebook and Instagram, mm-hmm. right? Last night after you posted that video, how often did you keep checking for the views and the likes and the comments?
No, it was on my phone and I got the notification and I was doing nothing. So it wasn't like I was checking it all the time. It was just,
it was there.
It's there.
Yeah. Okay. I will have to reconsider that B answer possibly. I don't know. The average results from this poll, about 40% of people surveyed answered B. You don't intentionally limit your social media use and you don't notice harmful effects as a result. Those of you who chose C, which is uncontrolled and unhealthy, those who admitted this were noticeably younger. Readers 18 to 39 were nearly twice as likely to call those habits injurious than those over the age of 40. Now, simultaneously, for those that said A, which it's under control, it's limited, it's healthy, your social media habits, about 40 plus respondents were twice as higher than their younger counterparts to choose A. So there is sort of this generational thing happening when it comes to social media and whether it's a good thing or not.
You're listening to The Kitchen Table, a father-son show talking about faith, music, and culture.
How does this culture, this technological age that we live in, all the glory, the conveniences, but also the consequences of this technological age, how does this culture harm or hinder our spiritual lives as Christians?
Well, I think it's really easy to become very self-centered off social media.
Mm-hmm.
You get a lot of likes and suddenly that's the only thing in life you start chasing. And then it becomes basically a god in your life.
With social media, it can be a distraction.
Distraction in what way?
The go-to Christian benefit of an iPhone is having the Bible app, which is the most downloaded iPhone app. It's the least used iPhone app.
So it's the most downloaded and the least opened is what you're saying?
Yeah. In my freshman connections class, we were talking about this. Our prof had us pull our phones out. On your iPhone, there is a page where it'll tell you your iPhone usage and like what apps you use the most and what takes most of your battery life. Almost everyone except for like one was Snapchat.
Interesting.
And the other one was like Instagram, I think. So it was all social media. None were the Bible. And then he asked us where our Bible app was in our list. And it was like somewhere 4 and 5, somewhere like at the bottom or not even on the list.
That's quite telling, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, let's look at some of the concerns before we look at the benefits, because there are benefits to technology and the technology advances that are available to us today through our phones and social media and whatnot. So first, the concerns, if we will. First concern is spiritual ADD. We are more easily distracted from the important issues of our lives moment by moment. The nature of digital communication is that we are endlessly distracted. A good example of this is the Apple Watch.
Yeah.
It's on your wrist. It's constantly with you. It's constantly vibrating whatever notification you have plugged into it. And we're just constantly distracted. And what that does when we're distracted leads to a dispersed consciousness. We either live in the presence of God and we live intentionally, or we live outside of the calm center spiritually. Believe that?
Yeah.
So can technology, can that distract us away? Can it create in us that spiritual ADD that they're talking about?
I think so. There's so many things you can do with an iPhone. There's good things, obviously. And like social media isn't bad in itself because it's a way to connect with people. If we take it the wrong way and if we take it with the wrong mindset, it can be a big ADD factor, ADD spiritually factor.
Mm-hmm. I definitely agree with Jake. I think it's probably the second biggest distracting of all time. Like you can do anything on your phone that you want to at any point and any time.
Another concern they're talking about here is losing our worldview this way. Literally, our lives are now broken down into code. We have digitalized everything and broken it down into a sequence of zeros and ones, okay? That's, of course, metaphor for danger. Life gets broken down and processed. It's harder and harder to see how things are connected to wholes, how things are integrated, how one particular insight is connected to God's world. So we experience, really, a world fragmented. Do you think you're losing your worldview because of the fragmentation of life with technology?
I don't think it's losing our worldview. I think it's more of our worldview is changing.
Okay.
I'm not calling you old, but...
Gee, thanks.
Your worldview is different than mine, and I'm your own kid. I lived with you for 18 years. So, like, I know what you believe in, and I know what your stance on. With social media, it's so easy to access, like, other people's opinions, and that's where people share their opinions. Not in the best way at times, but it's still there, and you can read it, and you can kind of get a sense for yourself. And you can get news on your phone. So, like, you can get your own beliefs through media.
Good thing or a bad thing?
It depends on your mindset with it.
Okay. It's kind of a scary thing.
You just can't believe everything you read.
Well, yeah, I know that. It's so easy to access other opinions and then see for yourself.
Right.
The world's just getting smaller.
It's true. At the same time, just to point on that, and I don't want to go off on a side tangent here, media literacy is one of the things not taught in public schools in the United States that is taught around the world in public schools. Understanding that media, there is always an agenda behind it. There's always an opinion that is being generated, and there's a purpose. They want you to do something based upon the information that they're giving you. And that's one of the things I think that's really lacking in our culture here.
Thank you for listening to The Kitchen Table, a father-son show talking about faith, music, and culture.
Another concern, we are losing our filters.
Yeah, I think with what I said, the whole social media and like sharing your opinions, some people don't have a filter and they post things that do not need to be posted. That's the filter I'm thinking of.
And that's everybody.
Yeah.
National leaders, not to drop a name. Celebrities that post things and have to pull them back. Kanye West this week completely took off social media. Do you see that?
No.
You guys didn't hear that? See, I know something on the inside. You guys don't?
I don't have social media anymore.
That's true.
So.
I don't care about news. Well, we have lost our knowledge hierarchy, okay? When you had something to say, it went through an editing process. There were other people that read it before it was actually published. Now everyone is self-published. Now, there are many good things that come from directly getting one's message, but a loss of filtering equals a loss of wisdom. And a lot of times we miss out on that. Another concern is posturing an image. With that social media stage that we're all on, we are all now performers. We are carefully crafting our appearances before an audience at all time. We're seeking to impress and to gain applause or likes or little hearts on Instagram or all the different things. That's what we're trying to do now. We're trying to please an audience. Everyone is happy on Facebook. Everyone seems to have a better life than I do, many think. We now have an audience-oriented sense of self. We are constantly thinking about communicating to our audience. Is that a healthy thing?
It can be. There's a lot of people that can be really motivational and influential. I know I used to follow a couple Christian sports players, stuff like that. But at the same point, it's a lot of the times the people who are following these people that are putting on a show for these guys are younger and more impressionable people. And they're already going through like self-image issues and stuff like that. And so they're looking at these pictures and they don't look anything like that. And then it's shaping the rest of their lives because they just feel insecure.
Well, they say now more than ever, your generation deals with more anxiety and depression than any other generation before you.
Yeah.
Do you think self-image and because of social media, do you think that feeds into it? Is that like the biggest contributing factor?
Yeah. Absolutely.
I was like, I think it's one of the big key factors.
What about since we're constantly connected? They say that now more than ever, we deal with loneliness.
I think it's because it's a different type of relationship. Mm-hmm. So with a social media relationship, you're not face-to-face. Like I have 1,000 friends on Facebook, but I don't say that I have 1,000 friends.
Right.
A face-to-face relationship like Josh and I's friendship, we met at Bandcamp and I would say he's one of my best friends already and we've known each other for 2 months now. That's completely different than a Facebook relationship that I've been friends with for a friend of mine who I talked to maybe like twice at high school.
Right.
I'm not close with them. I would say I'm closer with Josh. And so it's just a different type of relationship. And that's what feeds into our loneliness because we think that we have a bunch of friends because we have a bunch of followers or a bunch of friends on Facebook. But when you actually think about it, your real live friends, you don't have that many. And that's where self-image comes into play and loneliness comes into play. And when loneliness is there, depression comes.
Mm-hmm. So we would concur with this statement. Our closest relationships cannot flourish only in disembodied remote connections. Is it hard to have long distance relationships?
I think if there was a personal connection beforehand,
that's different.
Different story.
Yeah.
But like if you just meet someone online, like if one of Jake's 1,000 Facebook friends, he's never met them in person before, their relationship is going to be nothing compared to someone he sees every day, like Ethan or someone else.
I'll conclude this little segment with this thought before we transition here. One of the most radical things we can do as Christians right now in this world is face-to-face communication, and preferably around a dinner table, around a meal. It's no accident that Christ left us with a meal. Thought that was important.
You're listening to The Kitchen Table, a father-son show talking about faith, music, and culture.
What are some solutions to these concerns that we have? We need to study the disconnected. We need to look at folks like Josh, who has unplugged from social media. And there are many people out there who have done it. Examples of faithful Christians who live completely offline. Maybe we encourage folks to become what they call in this article a digital monk, to completely disconnect from the digital. So look at their lives and see how their lives are different from our own. Take a fast from our phones.
Yeah.
That could be just a few hours a day. Not like set it down for an entire week, month, year, whatever.
Yeah, that's hard to do nowadays. With us being in college, we have to have our iPads and our computers. And so it's really hard to do.
Right.
Like I have music theory homework that's due and I have to do it on my iPad.
It's required to have those devices now.
Yeah.
But you can still have a fast from it.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with that. But like I'm talking about like the week.
Here's another novel concept for you guys. How about writing a letter with paper and ink? When's the last time you've done that, Jake?
A long time.
Do we need to bring up the story of you're graduating from high school this year in May and all the gifts that were sent to you? And then we bought those thank you cards, those boxes and boxes of thank you cards.
It was only 2 boxes. Thank you very much.
I think there were 3, actually.
There was 2.
Okay, maybe 2. And how many thank you notes were sent out, Jake? None. Yeah, exactly. Why? Because you couldn't put ink to paper. Just a little simple thank you. It goes a long way. Okay, we'll just leave that alone. The final solution, use filters. Use technology in order to limit your technology consumption. I know that sounds strange, but there are plenty of things out there that shut off your phone when you can program it to shut it off. It can help you take that fast that you need. Another thing we need to do, another solution, I think this is important. We need to acknowledge God in technology. We need to live in the presence of God as we live in the presence of our online friends. What we type on our phones with our thumbs is an extension of our obedience to God and our testimony in this world. You have to realize, on Facebook, God is there. Scripture and prayer and Christian fellowship, all the things that constitute a Christian life, are present in the digital world as well. So God is there. As digital media breaks and fragments our attention, as we feel tugged away from our biblical worldview and towards sometimes spiritual distraction, we simply lose our awareness of life in God's presence. We must operate from a God-saturated worldview. We want more of God because we want to be satisfied by His presence, that we seek out edifying content online. We guard ourselves from the lure of vanity. We fast from our phones, and we prioritize our embodied worship together with the people of God. So some concerns, some solutions there. How has technology made us a better Christian? Because that's what we talked about. That was the initial question we discussed. Are there ways to follow Christ on a smartphone? Are there ways that this technology makes us a better Christian?
Yeah, I think most definitely. Like with what Josh said, the world is getting smaller. That's because we can reach to more people now.
Right.
And one of my things that you do, Dad, you post an uplifting post every day. It's just really encouraging. And I remember you say, like, you didn't post one thing a day for a while. And like people who weren't even Christians messaged you. And it was like, I really needed those. Like, where are they at?
Right. Yeah. And in essence, it's sort of become a community of faith, even though it's not face to face.
Yeah.
It's still digital. It's still sort of superficial, but you're able to speak into people's lives. So there are plenty of books available. You can follow all kinds of Christian authors now with blogs and websites, online sermons and videos, podcasts, plenty of additional resources to edify our Christian life. You're listening to The Kitchen Table, a father-son show talking about faith, music, and culture. Do you think Christian fellowship has increased or decreased because of the internet?
I think increased. For our church, for example, we have Facebook pages. So we have different ones. We have full congregation, then we have kids, then we have the young adults, and then we have college.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good way to get like an event or a small group started. And I think that's been a really big factor in helping with the fellowship of our church.
And also, to go off of what Jake just said, what better way to reach those people who aren't necessarily going to the church than using the social media that everyone else is using? Great recruitment option.
Well, they say that now anybody can share your faith, your spiritual experiences in ways that are encouraging hundreds, sometimes thousands of people that are Christian or not Christian, right? Do you think that the opening up of online friendships, do you think Christians now find it easier to open up and share in their local churches too because they're practicing online, so to speak?
Yeah. So like with our church group, it's a private group, so we can send prayer requests and problems that we're having with our church family. And I think that really helps build relationship because there's a sense of trust when you post that you're struggling. As you said before, a lot of people post about their best things in life. They don't post about the ugly things that are happening with their life.
Right.
There shows trust in posting about your struggles and your raw day. There's a sense of trust, and I feel like that builds a church really well.
All right, so wrap up our faith question. Can you follow Jesus with a smartphone? There are concerns. There are solutions to those concerns, and there are benefits from us using technology in our Christian faith. We just have to be careful. We have to know when you have to take those moments of fasting from technology and realize that it is so much better for fellowship to happen face-to-face rather than digital. Okay, so that wraps up our faith question. We move into a segment now we call Music Matters. So for those that are new to the program, Music Matters goes like this. We celebrate generational differences. We also celebrate music differences. You know, I work in music radio. I think I know all the songs that are out there, and I try to give them to my children to feed them spiritually. Jake comes along from that different generation with a song I've never heard of before, and I'm like, where'd you hear this song? And that's sort of how it happens. Mm-hmm. And so what we do is I share one, Jake shares one, Josh is our guest, he'll share one, and then I also do a one we call an oldie but goldie, because I have always introduced old songs to Jake as he stole my iPod when he was a kid and would listen to my old Christian mm-hmm. music. I get to go first, right?
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to get her name wrong. Avril?
Yep.
Avril Lavigne. I got it right. There you go. How about that? Avril Lavigne is a pop singer. About 5 years ago, 10 years ago, was a big pop singer. She's Canadian. She's been away for 5 years, dealing with a lot of life issues. She was like, I think Skater Boy was one of her hits. She's like a punk
Skater
rocker.
Boy.
Yeah.
Later, boy.
Well, anyway, during those 5 years, she actually contracted Lyme disease and thought she was going to die, quite honestly. During that whole process, a song was inspired by her crying out to God during that near-death experience. She literally thought she was going to die. The song is called Head Above Water. Now, parents out there, I don't know her faith journey. I do know that this song was written crying out to God, and I think that's a great thing, and I think it's going to speak to a lot of people. But again, I don't know her life. I don't know her faith journey, so I'm not going to recommend your kids listening to all of her music, but this song for sure. But I wanted to give you a quote from her. She said, "One night I thought I was dying. I had accepted that I was going to die. My mom laid with me in bed and held me. I felt like I was drowning. Under my breath, I prayed, God, please help me keep my head above the water. In that moment, the songwriting of this album began." So here is Avril Lavigne. Okay, I got it right again. Song is called Head Above Water.
God, keep my head above water. I lose my breath at the bottom. Come rescue me.
I like that.
It's a great song.
It's very different than her original.
Weird hearing that after hearing what she used to write. Yeah,
I would love to be able to just talk to her and find out where she is on her faith journey.
Yeah,
you know, because I don't
be
know.
Awesome.
Yeah, you know?
My turn.
Okay.
So my song for the week, it's a newer one. We were in chapel about 2 weeks ago. This song just really hit home for me. I've heard it before, but it was just kind of a new light. They did some different musical aspects to the song. So the song is Jesus, What a Savior by House Fires. And if you don't know who House Fires is, they're a very indie alternative little bit.
Indie alternative worship.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's just really good. I love them. So this is one of their kind of laid back songs. And it just talks about Jesus is a savior. What a brother. What a friend. And I just love it. Jesus, What a Savior by House Fires.
I don't know where you come up with these songs, but you find them and you introduce new stuff to me all the time. So thanks. Josh has a song for us.
I do, yeah. My song is Reckless Love by Corey Asbury, which is actually inspired to me from Jake after watching him go crazy during worship one day on his song.
Yeah.
But yeah,
thank you.
Reckless Love by Corey Asbury.
Again, one of the most popular songs from this year. Great song from Corey. Okay, now, since we've done the new stuff, we're going to dip back. We're going to go back quite a few many years in our segment that Jake has named Oldie but Goldie. Yeah. And this one, we're going to go back to 1989. I was in college. This is the number two song from 1989. The group is called First Call. The song is called Sweet Love. First Call, if you remember, is comprised of three singers. Marty McCall used to be in a band in the 70s called Fireworks. And then Bonnie Keene, who came out of musical theater. And then Mel Tunney was in a group, again in the 70s, 80s, called Truth. They met each other because they're professional background singers. And so they would get called on to do background vocals on a lot of the artists, decided to form their own group. And that created First Call. So this is 1989's second song, number two song of the year, First Call, Sweet Love.
Sweet.
Love. See how you did there?
That was good.
Thank you. That wraps up Music Matters for this week. And now we move into our final segment of the program. This is called Culture Shock. Okay, we're kind of keeping along that same theme of parenting and technology. How do we raise kids today in the digital era? So I would love to know your guys' thoughts on this, because you're now young adults. You've grown up in the digital era, and see if this really works or not. Changing times require for parents strategies in leading kids down the right path, and we have to adapt to the ever-evolving environment, especially when it comes to technology. So there's a few things you need to understand about getting involved with your children's digital engagement. First of all, one, you are a mentor, not just monitoring them. You are mentoring them. You are teaching them lessons. Mentoring allows us parents to create an environment where kids feel comfortable talking to us about their digital activities. You have to teach and you have to trust. The second thing is technology is a purposeful tool. It only depends on how our kids will use it. Schools, like you guys have already mentioned in the program, schools require research, digital communication, and computer skills. You guys are required to have an iPad here in college, and so you have to do a lot of assignments on that. As parents, we make it clear, technology is not meant for entertainment alone. If you start seeing them slipping away from having those face-to-face connections, you need to impose a cutback immediately. Third thing we need to know is we need to learn the platform as well. We cannot guide our children if we don't understand it. So we have to maybe even ask our children to explain it to us, show us firsthand the experience so that we can develop the skills as well. Your children should understand the technology, but they should also understand that you have the authority over the technology. Best tips when it comes to parenting children, raising kids in this digital era. Here we go. Orient your child that you will be involved in their digital technology. They need to know and understand why you have to interfere. Be honest with them. This is a good example. My youngest son, Michael, who's 8 years old, would turn on the chat feature playing a game on the iPad. And we told him he couldn't do that. He didn't understand why. And so we had to explain to him why, that people that are chatting on the other side, they might not be that 8 or 9 year old boy playing the game with you. They might be someone who wants to cause harm to children. You understand what I'm talking about? We had to warn him that it's not safe to do that and to not turn the chat feature back on. We have to establish limits, routines, and guidelines. We have to restrict screen time. We have to restrict the types of websites that they're visiting. Guidelines, proper guidelines in setting up social media accounts. For example, any social media account, they say age 13 is best. And now showing research when it comes to smartphones, that smartphones should not be given to, how old do you think?
Probably eighth grade.
Eighth grade? Okay, what do you think?
I think high school. So a year later.
Specialists now say 15, 16 years old is really the low end.
I was right.
Is that like sophomore year?
No, that's freshman year.
Freshman year, so high school. And that again has to do with the anxiety of the image. The anxiety of the image that is being portrayed. Restricting screen time. My 8-year-old gets 1 hour a day that he has to earn, and that's through behavior. And on the weekends, possibly up to 2 hours a day. Just depends. You have to set those kinds of rules, those kinds of guidelines. You need to put filters on there, the types of websites they're having access to. You need to learn that technology together. They learn it way quicker than we do as parents. And so we have to allow them to teach us how to do some of the hacks. Not actually hacking a website, some of the easy tricks. Yeah, that's what the hacks are called today, right? You have to encourage your children to talk openly about their online experience. Create an environment of openness. Did you guys feel open to talk about technology?
I mean, I had it different because you work with technology all the time.
So I was always a step ahead of you is what you're saying. Yeah.
Yeah. I always went to you for help.
It's true.
Like with my computer.
When it came to technology, my parents just installed a bunch of apps on my phone that monitored and protected when I could use it, for how long, what I could do on it. So I never really had a problem with abusing it.
Make your children understand that you have a certain set of beliefs and principles that are different from the standards of the internet and other people. Just the other day, I had a conversation with our youngest Michael about this. Well, so-and-so gets to play this app. Well, that's so-and-so. In our family, we don't do that. You know, I don't like that kind of an app. There's too much violence in it. I don't want to see that kind of thing. This is a teaching moment for your kids about your faith-based principles, guidelines that you've created. It flows into technology as well.
Yeah. And to the kids, teenagers, whatever age you are at, your parents care for you. They want what's best for you. And if they're just taking precautions for websites and for apps and for time restrictions, because it's probably what's best for you. If you're playing video games for 5 hours straight, usually not a good thing. So just
usually not
most of the time,
not. Most of the time.
If it's a Saturday morning, it's fine.
So much for watching cartoons all morning. We're going to play video games
college.
For 5 hours.
Yeah. Honestly. But your parents are looking out for you, looking out for what's best. So please respect them for that.
They're not doing it just to be mean. And there's a real reason behind it.
All right. Here's one for the parents. And I'm stepping on my own toes here, just so you know. Always set a good example. Follow your own rules. Children will follow what you do more than what you say. which means setting that technology down yourself. Listen to your children's input and opinions about technology. Let them say their oppositions so you can assess whether you have to improve in some areas. That's not negotiating skills, which all of our children are negotiators. We know that, right? And like Josh mentioned earlier, there are plenty of parental controls and softwares on websites that will restrict your children. Block unnecessary sites. Look for those. Remember this, technology should solve problems, not create them. If your child is starting to struggle with the use of the technology, then you should help them understand what's no longer healthy. Plenty of others on that list. We're actually going to post that list to the Kitchen Table group. It's a group on Shine.fm's Facebook page. So if you want to, again, communicate with us or get that full list, we're going to put that on the Facebook group, The Kitchen Table, on the Shine.fm Facebook page. Well, that's going to wrap up this program for this week. We hope that it's been a benefit to you. Thank you guys for hanging out with us. Thank you for Josh for tuning in.
Yeah, thanks for
joining us here as a guest this week. Again, if you want to communicate to either one of us, the best way to do that is to be a part of the Kitchen Table group on the Shine.fm Facebook page. We have discussions there. We try to dig more deeper into these topics. If you have a question, if you have a faith question that you would want us to discuss in a future program, you can do that as well. We would love to do that. So thank you so much for tuning in.
Have a great week, y'all.
Thanks for listening to The Kitchen Table on the Shine.fm podcast network from Olivet Nazarene University. Be sure to subscribe for more content delivered each week on faith, music, and culture.